Welcome to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, where I, Monique Chambers, am joined by businesses that have sold their product and services overseas. Welcome to this week's edition of Exporting Malta with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Stephen Katkuti Bonavita. Now, we've spoken before on my very, very first series called Entrepreneur Clinic. You are one of the newbies teaching us about, you know, how you set up your business and what was happening then. I think then you had about 30 staff, something along those lines.
Yeah, that's it. That's 3 years ago, but it's a very long time ago as well. And the way companies work. So yeah, so thank you for having me. So we actually started Altaro 10 years ago.
Wow.
And
okay.
About 3 years ago is when things, I'd say, really kicked off in terms of us starting to export and starting to, you know, expand beyond, you know, even just close to us, you know, into the UK, the US and so on. Since then, now we've grown to a team of 120 people.
Wow.
We've got about 80 here in Malta. We also expanded internationally. So we've got a team in the US, about 3 people in the UK, 2 in Germany, a team in Macedonia as well. So we've kind of grown the team. And we now have about 50,000 business customers around the world, about 9,000-10,000 partners. So these are partners who represent us within their local territories, and they sell us to their own customers. And if we were to look at revenue, let's say in 2018, we generated about 7.8 million euros in revenue, and last year we went up to about 10.4, so we continue to grow, and yeah, most of our business is international, so 95% international.
What does Altaro actually do? Because you see the billboards,
right?
You see the name everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, what does it actually do?
Yeah, so the concept is pretty simple. So we all have a PC at home, and inevitably at some point something goes wrong. You drop coffee on the PC, or a virus hits, or you just delete stuff and don't know where it is. You know, it's the usual thing. So we provide backup solutions. So basically we take a backup of your laptop, and then if something goes wrong, you can recover it. The only difference is that we don't actually do it for home users, we do this for businesses. So
okay.
Businesses have exactly the same problems. So somebody can be walking and trips over a wire, you know, does something wrong in the server room or something like that, and before you know it, their business is not working anymore, and so they need a backup, and that's where we come in.
And even somebody leaving their laptop on a train or something like that, they get a new laptop and you can
build up the
new thing. Yeah. So business customers, so that's a lot of people using your software.
Yeah, no, we've got and some good brand names again. There's as well. There's NASA using us, BBC, and a host of others. So yeah, a lot of good names.
So the space shuttle is like, you know,
yeah, it's all
up on Altaro.
Yeah, that's it.
That's fantastic.
It's all on Altaro. No, I'm joking. I mean, it's obviously not the entire, you know, not exactly. So.
You don't have to tell them that.
They don't just depend on us, but yeah.
So you came up with this idea, obviously, years ago. It's been building and building. How did you start expanding? And you talked there about partners in certain territories. Why did you go with partners in some territories, and you know what business models do you employ?
So I think the most important lesson, or the most important thing you have to do, is really focus on who your target market is. So I see a lot of people who want to go international, but they don't really hone in on the real target market, or the person you really want to focus on. And that's what we ended up doing. So for us, the target market is a business, usually a small or medium-sized business, and they've got an IT infrastructure, which is basically most companies out there. But we were very specific on trying to figure out, okay, who takes care of that IT infrastructure for them, and where do those people hang out? And I think that applies to everyone. So if you're going after something, if you want to go after the UK, you don't just have a Facebook ad that runs in the UK for, you know, anyone who's between 20 and 30 and expect something to happen. You really have to hone in on, okay, this is the person who will definitely use my product, and you start there and you build outwards. So we spent a lot of time and effort just figuring out who those people were and where they hung out, and then promoting in that way.
Because each market is different. Like you say, in Malta, people use Facebook all the time, and pretty much only Facebook.
Yeah.
But internationally, there'll be, you know, still physically printed magazines. People use LinkedIn. People use there's vertical market specific publications.
Yeah.
But in all of these countries, you're in 100 and
Yeah, I think we've sold in 120, but I mean, that looks nice on a poster, obviously it looks nice on a billboard, but the reality is that even though we have sold in so many countries, we focus on our top 10 countries. So we look at the US, we look at the UK, we look at Germany. I mean, the top 10 countries you can think of, that's where we put all our attention. And then everything else just happens to, because we're successful in those countries, then the other countries kind of just has come in as a bonus.
So. And do you find it different when you're, you know, there's obviously stereotypes around dealing with the Americans versus dealing with the Germans. Do you have to do anything different with your, you know, there might be a different guy. It might be a 40-year-old in Germany. It might be a 20-year-old in the UK. Yeah. What are the differences that you find? Just pick any two countries.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, obviously there are all the cliches, and I won't go through all the cliches because we all know them, but that's there are those which do have some merit to a certain degree. But I think the most important lesson that we learned is always that people, at the end of the day, people still buy from people. Mm-hmm. So if you give a good service and a good local service, people are much more receptive to that. So the US, they love, they don't mind buying from a European company. They're happy to do that, but they need to have local support. They need to feel that there's someone local who can help them.
Right.
So the same in the UK, the same in Australia. So I think that's sort of a common truth that runs through pretty much every country that we get into. We try to find local partnerships, so somebody local who can represent us, and then they are our voice when they're dealing with the customers, and that makes a big difference.
And so do they have to work by your standards? So you impose, you know, the time they have to respond to each call, the, you know, whatever has to be.
Yes and no, because the way we work is that, and a lot of companies work this way, especially in the IT industry, which is basically you have local representatives. So in Malta, for example, if you're a small company, if you're a law firm with 10 employees, you don't necessarily have an IT guy. You actually get a partner, sort of an IT services company, to come in and do it for you. So we just take care of those guys, and we just expect that they would take care of their customers properly. So yeah, we don't really impose too much, but we kind of let them do their thing. Having said that, we also have distributors within each country. So if you take Germany, for example, we don't speak German. We don't have anyone in the company that speaks German. But we do have a distributor locally who gives support locally in German and provides the same level of service that we would. And in that case, then we do have certain expectations. So, yeah, we do impose.
But so your office locally in Malta, do you have like a 24-hour support for the other countries that do want support? So there's people in the building at all times.
Exactly. So it's either in the building or they might, if need be, work from home, or we've also got a team in Macedonia, so helping us with support, and that's why it's 24/7 that we can just rotate the stuff.
And you don't need to do the different languages, or the product does different languages anyway, so
we stick to English. I mean, because IT is a very international, English is a very international language within IT, so most of our customers, because of the size we are also, they're happy to, you know, the product's in English, they're happy to get support in English, but when that's an issue, then that's where the local representatives come in and they help out. So,
so with your product, do people download it or do they buy a box?
They download it.
So there's
boxes,
no physical.
Exactly, no physical. That's the beauty of software, right? You can be anywhere and you can do it from anywhere and no one really cares. So, yeah.
And you can just target them in various ways. You know,
exactly. It's all digitally done and, yeah, as long as you've got all the processing and, things like that.
So growing a company in, you know, from 30-odd people to 100-odd people in 3 years, what lessons have you learned there, especially going internationally at the same time? What are the things that you think, oh, yeah, wished we'd read up about that, you know, or someone told us about that?
Yeah, I think the hardest part, especially between 30 and 120, so we're four co-founders, it's myself, David Vella, Julian Patros, and Simon Attard, and we all handle different areas. But what happens is that at 30, everyone is involved. Like, I've got my area and they've got their own areas. But as you get bigger, the amount of control you can have over that area starts to diminish, which is the way it should work. Yes, it's good. It needs to diminish because even once you get to a certain size, even the value we can bring on a day-to-day basis isn't as, isn't as much as when we were a bit smaller. So I think the lesson is that as you keep growing, you have to let go and you have to empower the people underneath you and you have to let them kind of run with things. And then you're there as a sounding board and, you know, let them kind of implement. And I think that's pretty important.
One of the things. And do you all still, you know, come in every day? You all still, you know, this one does the traveling, that one does this, or you still have very mixed responsibilities?
No, it's still very similar to how it was, a few years ago. You kind of stick to it. So I'm the guy, I'm the one with the briefcase, and and the others are the ones in a dungeon, you know, the coders getting stuff ready, and all the cliches about coders and sales and marketing people apply as well.
Exactly. So expanding so rapidly, mm-hmm. is there any help that you had from anybody local, anybody, any of the institutions, associations? Did anyone locally?
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of help locally, and I think a lot of people don't realize how much help there actually is locally.
Okay.
So from Malta Enterprise to Trade Malta to there's a new entity called Tech.mt. So there's a lot of different places where these are just sort of government related, but mm-hmm. there's also non-government related as well. You know, entities like Silicon Valletta and some others, which, you know, if anyone wants to start up a company, there are a lot of places they can go. So if we take Trade Malta as an example, mm-hmm. we run a number of trade shows in different countries. Every time we organize this trade show, they actually finance half the cost of
okay.
that trade show. So that allows you essentially not to save money where you can put it in the bank. You know, it allows you to have twice as many trade shows
because yeah.
you do twice as many shows. So it really has helped us. So yeah.
And what do you find at these trade shows? Because are they obviously valuable to you,
mm-hmm.
but are you finding small companies attending? Is attendance keeping up?
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to have, you know, an impressive stand, that kind of thing, that people actually come towards you? They have the name recognition.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting question, because initially I thought, okay, let's go to the biggest trade show we can find in our industry, have a nice big stand, and, you know, people will come. You know, it doesn't work like that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, what we do now is actually the total opposite of what we did at the beginning, which is basically we find the smallest trade shows we can find,
mm-hmm.
which is as targeted as possible. They're also much cheaper, but there's instead of 10,000 people, there's 500 people who attend, but we know those are really the core 500 people that we want to market to. And we have a small booth there, and we can have conversations. And the funny thing is, even though there's 10,000 people or there's 500 people, you end up having more or less the same amount of conversations, because you're only going to be 3 or 4 people on a stand anyway,
uh-huh.
manning the booth. So, and the difference also is that you're not one of 1,000, you're one of 25 vendors. So that was a big lesson, actually, that we learned. And till today, that's how we operate now. It's smaller events
uh-huh.
in more places.
And so these are things that you find the exhibitions, or do Trade Malta, do they sort of help you with that aspect as well, or do you go to them and say, we've got these 5 for this year, we'd like to attend and send X people, do X stands?
Yeah,
and
no, it's more, I mean, Trade Malta trust that, you know, we know what we're doing to a certain extent, and
mm-hmm.
we try to find, we know what's in our best interest to find the show that works, and obviously because we're putting money in it as well, they assume that we're not just wasting the money.
Uh-huh.
So they trust us to do that, and we find the right ones, okay. and then we go to them and tell them, this is what we did.
So, are they kind of easy to deal with? Because you always imagine when you see these government things, well, there's going to be, oh, God, it's going to be turgid, there's going to be a million, you know, reams of paper to fill in.
I think as long as once you figure out the, you know, there's certain paperwork that you need to fill out,
mm-hmm.
and as long as you're doing that properly, I mean, at the beginning you have to figure that stuff out and say, okay, wait, there's maybe a little bit too much paperwork or things like that, but once you get into the flow and you understand what you need to do, then it's not that difficult, and then it's pretty easy, especially from their side as well. Once you've done it once or twice and they trust you and whatever, then it goes nicely. Sometimes it's more daunting than it actually is once you get into it.
And so you sort of, they keep in touch with you on a regular basis, do they do, because I see they do trade missions, is that something you get involved with? Or?
Yeah, I mean, they've offered us, but in our case, it's, we'd like to do kind of our own thing, and then
uh-huh.
we'll go back to them afterwards.
Yeah. You're quite big now, at least, you're not sort of, you know, a two-man band sort of trying
yeah,
to
so, exactly.
get into your first market.
Yeah.
What are the things that you've learned along the way for other people who would do software
mm-hmm.
marketing? What would you say to them, like, these 3 things you need to really have in your toolkit for internationalizing? Sorry.
Yeah. So being very specific, and I think this applies not just to software marketing, but actually it applies to everything. So
mm-hmm.
I see this mistake done over and over again, even locally. So when somebody sets up, for example, locally, they set up a website, an online shopping website. They
mm-hmm.
want to be the Amazon.com in Malta.
Mm-hmm.
But what do? They set up an online shopping cart where you can buy 1,000 different items. The problem with 1,000 different items, and from vacuum cleaners to books to everything, is that you can't be an expert in helping people with 1,000 different items.
Mm.
So what ends up happening is that you don't become very good at providing a good level of service on everything that you offer. And this applies abroad as well. So if you're going international, you can't set up something which is going to apply to, you know, mass market of 1 billion people. You have
mm.
to really figure out who is the where's the gap in the market of somebody who has a need which hasn't really been catered for well, and focus on that first.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a software tool for HR managers of a particular size of company in a particular industry. So the deeper you get, the more you can cater the solution for someone who would say, you know what, that's something I'm missing, and that would be the perfect solution to the problem I have. So that's so my biggest advice is really try to don't be as broad as possible, be actually as targeted as possible to get the smallest group possible and come up with a solution which really works for them. Rather than just going broad and you know.
I was always taught the secret of marketing is targeting, you know, and that's almost it.
Exactly. So it's marketing, it's the product itself, so even the product. So when you're building the product, we had many occasions where, so our product is built for companies up to 1,000 employees. Mm. And we're very strict about this from the beginning. But the problem with being strict about it as well is if you get somebody coming up to you and saying, I'm 5,000, 10,000 employees, I want your tool, and I'm willing to pay you whatever price to do it. That's a very difficult soul-searching decision you have to make. So do I give in to this one customer and do what they want, or do I stick to my guns and keep building a product which applies to many more people? Mm. It's happened to us many times, and many times we said, no, we're not going to go with the, you know, we're not going to go after the big client who wants that one big feature just for them, but we're going to focus on, you know, what our core market is and figure that out and stick to that. And so that's the true.
It really is sticking to your objectives and not really wavering too much.
Yeah, it's important. It's important. And I think also what happens is the market starts to appreciate that a little bit as well, because they start to see, okay, these guys are not, this is what they say they are, and it's actually what it says on the tin, rather than, okay, they say they're this, but actually they're something else.
They will, yeah, you do it, they trust you, exactly. And frankly, they're trusting you with everything on their machines, so.
In our case, exactly. So if something goes wrong, and especially with backup, if something goes wrong, your fallback is your backup. Mm-hmm. So if that goes wrong, then you're really in trouble. So they need to trust us. So.
No, it is. I always find it horrific. I know you don't target consumers, but maybe universities should buy it from you actually, because you always get those stories where the university student hasn't backed up their thing and their thesis is due, and you just want to give them a slap. I mean, there's no reason not to back up, you know. Like there's no reason. So maybe you could target universities.
I think everybody went through that once, and then after that happens once, it's like, okay, I'm not going to write a 10,000 to a thesis again. I'm going to.
Well, hopefully never in your life again anyway, frankly, but you know. So. But so you've been doing this for a long time now. It feels like a long time. I'm not going to ask you what you do for fun, because I know business is fun for you. You've got your finger in some other pies.
Yeah, so there's a local company who I recently invested in a couple of years ago called Evently.com is empty. And basically what Evently was set up by these two entrepreneurs, John at Super de France and Ben Vincenti. And essentially what it does is it's the problem we all find when we're trying to, let's say, organize an event, whether it's a birthday party or whether it's a corporate event, is you have to chase 25 different vendors. You have to ask for quotes. They don't get back to you. It's a nightmare. Everybody's experienced this firsthand. So they said, you know what, how about we flip it? And instead of you going out to everyone asking for quotes, how about you just say, go to the website, put in when your event is, say what you need, whether it's a photographer or location or catering or whatever, and let the vendors come back to you and tell you whether they're available and start that conversation that way. And it's been really successful. They launched it recently, a couple of years ago, and you know they've got hundreds of vendors on board, and it's a really nice story. It really works well. And now the next step is going international, so that's a big challenge.
Then that would be finding suppliers in all of those markets.
Exactly.
And is it one of those things that has like a Trustpilot rating that you know these people are, you know, they delivered the right food at the right time? Did they do that kind of thing as well?
Not yet, because also locally people know more or less about everything, but eventually there will be sort of review system and so on. Yes.
So that's a completely different sell to what you're doing now with Altaro.
Yeah.
So how do you get your head around that?
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's the same, it's a totally different market, it's not software, but ultimately it all boils down to there's a problem that needs to be solved and there's a solution for it, and actually it's a technological solution. So it's obviously it's a website, so it's web-based, and a lot of lessons that we learned in software, maybe some of them can also be applied to, you know, outside of software as well, like what we mentioned. So finding your target market and making sure it's the product is built for them and not for somebody else, and things like that. So
this is like they have two audiences, so they have the vendors that need to list, but then you need the people who need to buy, and
that's it.
Getting who do you get first, you know, chicken and egg, and those people then need to talk about it.
Yeah, that's
it. I suppose both of them need to talk about it. Yeah. So what are the other differences for them going internationally? How are you going to tackle them finding vendors? How do they put that as a Facebook ad? I mean, how do they go into Italy and ask for florists?
So if we look at Altaro, it's a software product which you can basically download no matter where you are in the world. You can try it. If it works for you, you can buy it. So that's just, you know, horizontal. It can go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so that's, from that angle, it's super easy. It's online. As long as you market to the right people, no matter where they are, at least they might try your product. In the Evently case, it's the total opposite. It's exactly the situation you mentioned. It's chicken and egg. So you can't go into a place where you don't have enough vendors, because if somebody makes a request and there's no one replying, it's just a tumbleweed. So it's really about finding that location where they can hone in on, okay, let's target these vendors, and also let's make sure there's a market for organizing events or things like that, and kind of getting those two together. And the interesting thing is that they did something similar in the UK, just as an experiment. Mm-hmm. And this is with a sister company, which is called Get Hitched, which is the same thing, but it's for organizing weddings. Exactly. Uh-huh. Same thing, which is also very successful. But the lesson then learned in the UK, so they tried it in the UK, and the sales model was different. So in Malta, you can phone people up, and they'll usually answer the phone, and they'll usually take a meeting, and you can actually speak to them, which is, I think, part of the maybe Mediterranean culture. You know, you want to meet people, they're open to talking. There's actually quite a high trust level, although we think that maybe there isn't. There actually is quite a high trust level between people here, mm-hmm. where, let's say, in the UK, the issues they found was they would phone people, and they would get answers, and it was harder to get through to people, and when they did, they might organize meetings, but then the vendor wouldn't necessarily turn up for those meetings.
Ew.
And it happened over and over again. And then what we realized after a while was there's a certain level of cynicism in the UK, where maybe, you know, they get bombarded by people all the time, maybe selling things which aren't quite right. And so there's a bigger barrier towards outsiders or towards people selling them stuff. While in Malta, there's a bit more trust, because we're also a much smaller country, obviously, than the UK. So there was this interesting, you know, differences between them. So you have to, in the UK, you have to build trust up much quicker than here to even get a meeting or speak to someone.
And so you targeting, in this case, the UK again, and where next? Are you going to mirror the countries that you've got with Altaro, or is it completely different because now you're not targeting, although the IT manager might want to go and get married or whatever, or have a party, so you know, he might be fine, but you're targeting, you know, I'm going to say humans, but, you know, rather than workers in this case. So the whole thing is different. So how do you identify your countries? How do you know where to start with this?
Yeah, so I think it boils down to where is there the biggest demand for, if we take events, mm-hmm. so we would search for, I mean, we're running this exercise now. So it's going to various different European cities and looking up, checking with Google, how many searches are there for corporate events, whether it's, you know, I need a photographer for my, you know, staff party or things like that. And then once we kind of filter that all out and see which regions have the highest requests for these sort of things, then that's where we'll probably start, and we'll start making those phone calls and so on, and start, you know, building the market there.
But it's a more intense
job
than, again, with Altaro, because with you, you go to a show, people come to you, you've already obviously got a lot of brand awareness now, people know what you do.
Yeah.
Just download, but now you have to physically have relationships with many more people, probably.
Yeah, no, that's it. And it's also with the Altaro side, there was a need, which people knew that they had that need.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for a solution for that need. I need a backup solution. So that's the easiest place to start.
Ah.
It's like, you know, you go into a store and they've got clothes, because you need clothes, you go in and you buy clothes, right? So, but with this, but with Evently, it's the opposite. Nobody knows that they need a website like evently.com to solve their problem. So that's also part of the problem, trying to figure out how do you trailblaze and kind of create this marketplace. A bit like Airbnb, nobody really knew that they wanted to stay at other people's houses till, Airbnb showed up, and now it makes total sense to everybody.
Yeah, create the need. And,
exactly. About 10 years ago, no one would even think of that. They'd think, I'm going to get X, Y, and Z. So,
always just stay in a hotel. Yeah,
exactly. It's the safest thing. Same with Uber, right? So
I mean, those things really have been... life changes. And I'm guessing with Evently.com, there's also the opportunity to cross-sell and upsell stuff, because you might think, I want a party, but then suddenly there's a cocktail van or something that's available, and then there's, you know, doves in boxes or whatever. So you can make people's parties better than they might have done it themselves by having these other vendors on site that can pitch themselves.
And I think it all, this applies to everything actually, and it applies to pretty much most businesses. I think most people take for granted the level of service you give. I know it's something people mention, but even for us, let's say from the Altaro side, if somebody phones us up, we don't leave them waiting for 3 hours. You know, we don't even leave them waiting for 3 minutes. We give them a 22-second response time. So we'll answer them straight away. And the same with Evently. So if you use a service and then you get a good level of service and people are answering you straight away and you're not waiting 3 days for a quote from somebody, then you're going to want to use that for other things as well. So that's the first place you look. So I think that's something that applies to pretty much any business. Just keep that level of service and responsiveness. People appreciate it, and they do react to that, and they come back.
And it means you can all sleep at night as well. You know, you've done a good job, and
that's it.
You know, you can't say what happened at someone's journey to work or someone's party, but at least you know you've done your bit to make it go as well as it could possibly go.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a look at this evently.com. I'm going to see what kind of wacky stuff starts to appear.
Yeah.
It's my 50th this year.
Right.
I want to have a wild party while I still can. Anyway, have you got any funny stories about, doing business internationally? Is there any, if you had to do karaoke in South Korea or anything like that? Have you?
Right. No. So it's a story from, literally, it was about 2 or 3 months ago. I went to, we have a partner in the States, specifically in Texas. And when I met him, I mean, he's been our partner for a while, but when I met him, he was wearing, he wasn't wearing a cowboy hat, but he had a one of those Caterpillar red hats. He had a big jacket on, really fancy cowboy type of shoes and things like that. And so we sat down and had lunch together. And about halfway through lunch, I was bigging up, Pete Buttigieg, because I was saying, we're Maltese, Pete Buttigieg, Democrat, he's coming out, he's up and coming, he's going to do great things, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, pride of the Maltese that we're, I was promoting Pete, and he turned around at me and he told me, when you're in these parts of the States and you see somebody wearing a big red hat with this name on it and a big jacket and these cowboy shoes, you should never mention Democrats because,
it's like the sign at the Leah Football Club, no politics to be mentioned here, sort of.
Exactly. He shot me down straight away,
No, it is hard because you speak the same language, you watch the same TV, you think you're actually the same kinds of people, and especially when you think their politics are completely nuts, you can't imagine actually anybody really following it. You think it's
But then the reality of the situation is just like people outside Malta looking in, the same. When you actually get there and you actually speak to people, they live a totally different reality to what we see. So obviously it's a basic, right? You have to be politically sensitive and maybe not even mention politics in the first place, but then in certain situations it starts to hit. And I mean, no love lost with him, we still chatted today, but I put my foot in it.
So another lesson learned: targeting, marketing, all of that stuff. So as always, thank you for coming in. Stephen Kekuti Bonavita from Altaro Software and also evently.com.mt.
thank you very much.
We'll speak to you, I'm sure, in another series sometime soon. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, produced by me, Monique Chambers, with technical assistance from Carmelo Grech and Redent Abdillah. This show is aired every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. and repeated on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. here on Campus FM.